Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Well, good morning, Jacob's Well. Good to see you all here today. I'm Greg Meyer, and back in the swing of things and everything. It's a great day. As Jordan said, on the back of your Sunday paper, there is an outline. You're welcome to follow along on that if you wish with the message. It's a, you know, if you hear something, you see something, you write it, you stick with it, but the big idea is that you're getting some of your own ideas down on paper, because that's what we want to do. We're trying to start a conversation today that's going to bother you all week long. In fact, we want to bother you with this conversation through the whole rest of the month of September. So, bother in a good way. You know, so we do a lot with breathing and silence here, and I just want to think about that a little bit differently. Like, but if you're really quiet right now, I don't know, if you're like me, I'm looking out the windows at a maybe gray, but pretty beautiful September day. But can you be quiet enough to hear 120-mile-an-hour winds howling in South Florida right now? I mean, as we gather, that's what's happening. Can you hear the panic in people's lives still in the Houston area? The Pacific Northwest, actually the whole Western Canada and the U.S. with wildfires, and the people in Mexico. Can you hear the storms in some people's lives here? We've had members of our community whose someone in their family died this week. We've had people who have had significant birthdays. I won't mention that. Some of them have turned 50, but... And all sorts of things that are happening in our lives. Can we be quiet enough to hear that stuff and to be there for it? Or are you going to do what probably I end up doing most of the time? I'm going to do my thing, and I make enough noise to drown that out. That's kind of what we're talking about this week. Humanize. And, one of those light topics, you know, just kind of talk about how we can be human beings, real human beings, the kind of things that we're proud of, the things that we want to be. There is a lot of talk among some religious circles, and at least maybe more historically than today, but about how being human wasn't a good thing. You know, that's something you're supposed to beat back, something we're supposed to suppress. We're supposed to overcome our humanity. That's our weakness, our flaw, and we're supposed to be something better than that. I reject that. I think, no, our humanity is this wonderful, beautiful, unique thing about us. I think we're called to do it. Are we perfect in our humanity? No. I mean, just think of all the horrible things that have been done in this world by human beings. I mean, we are capable of terrible things, but that isn't the ideal of our humanity. That is what happens sometimes because we lose sight of what we are called to and who we can be. And I think with a beauty, the possibility of humanity is so much greater. I think the Bible agrees with me. I always like to use the Bible to support me. But the first chapter of the Bible in the story of creation and its wonderful poetic way of talking about it, it says that God created humanity. God created humankind, male and female. God created us. And then at the end of that day, God looked at all God had made and said, it is not only good, but it is exceedingly good. We were created to be exceedingly good, not perfect, not without flaw, not without struggles to become who we are, but to be absolutely wonderful. You know, so I think our goal isn't to escape or to beat down our humanity, but to realize it more fully. So I have a question for you. If humanizing ourselves, if realizing our humanity is that so important, what is the truest measure of your humanity? What characteristic do you think is the truest measure of your humanity? If you look on your Sunday paper, you'll find a little box there with you, giving you a chance to write what you think your answer is to that. Now, I'm not talking about what makes us Homo sapiens, what makes us like physical human beings, but our humanity. What is the one component that really makes us human? Go ahead, take a few seconds and write down what you think it is. No wrong answers to this. Probably lots of them that are we're thinking about and talking about. What is the truest measure of your humanity? Anybody want to throw out their idea? Vulnerability. Empathy. Compassion. Connection to others. Love. Self-reflection. Only people on this side have ideas? Come on. Conscience. No one said coffee yet. Anything else? That's a good spread. That's a good spread. So those are all really good ideas, and actually they're all, you know, you can sort of feel the interrelatedness of most of the things that people offered there. Variations on the themes and different sides of the many-sided coin that is in there. I think it'd be fun to pursue all those conversations. I hope you do get a chance to unpack what you were thinking about there. But I'm going to make a proposition today that there is one characteristic above all other things that define us as humans, that defines our humanity, the truest measure of it. And that word is, someone said it, and quite a few people said variations on it, and it is compassion. I think it is our capacity for compassion that defines us as human beings. And what we seek when we talk about our humanity with one another. I mean, just think about it. Whenever we have those conversations or hear those conversations about questioning someone's humanity, what are we talking about? We're talking about something about their lack of ability to have concern and care for other people or other things, that they aren't able to realize what is going on and to value that and to care about it. And so we question their humanity because of this lack of an ability to have compassion. We see this represented in all kinds of ways. Remember the movie WALL-E a couple of years ago? I think I actually made it into GogFlix, if I remember right, back then. So WALL-E is a robot in some future Earth that has been so polluted that everybody just had to get out, right? We couldn't stay behind, but we left these robots behind to clean things up. And I think WALL-E was the only one left or something at this point that was still trying to straighten things out. And Disney, of course, wanted us to like WALL-E. But WALL-E is a robot, and it's kind of hard to like a robot. So what did they have to do? I mean, they wanted us to identify with him. And so this is what happened. Pretty simple. Well, he displayed compassion. He cared about a cockroach. I don't know that I've ever been accused of that. but in this case, it's maybe the only other living thing, or the only living thing on the planet. I mean, he cared about it. He had compassion. Because we saw him do that and other things like that, we cared about WALL-E. We saw some humanity there, and that was our connection with him. That's important. You know, if that doesn't prove my point, that compassion is the truest measure of our humanity, then this recipe definitely does. Chris Tripolino shared this with me a couple days ago from our conversations around this. So this is a recipe for Pie Parade. And there's a little quote from Helen Bamber. I don't know if you're familiar. She's a philanthropist, foundation person, kind of a judicial expert from England that died not too long ago. Anyway, she writes, "For me, compassion is about the stranger to whom we owe nothing. It is about our it is about how our society will be judged and how we discover our humanity. It is about finding our reward through the eyes of those to whom we owe nothing. It is about love. Humanity comes from our compassion. Our compassion is we discover our humanity in our compassion. Compassion is about love, and love isn't, you know, love that isn't just for your own gain, for your own pleasure, for your own self-interest, but something that you give to others, you give away to others because of an intrinsic value that you see in those people. Jesus made that point like over and over again. Sometimes he did it through what he said, and sometimes he did it through what he did. In fact, it was constantly displayed in what he did, but sometimes he said in his words, and maybe nowhere more clearly than in this little reading from, or little story from the Gospel of Luke. Luke wrote the story of Jesus' life. In chapter 6, he has Jesus saying this. He says, if you love those who love you, what does that prove? Even bad people do that. But love your enemies. Do good, expecting nothing in return. You will not regret it. You will be a reflection of the Most High when you love those who don't love you. You will be a reflection of the Most High, who is kind even to those who are ungrateful and wicked. He finishes by saying, be merciful, be compassionate. The word in Greek can go either direction. Be compassionate as the giver of all life is compassionate. Yes, the giver of life is compassionate. God, Yahweh, I am who I am. The kind of this foundation behind the fabric of existence that all of us are created from and that we reflect that image of. There's many ways of that the Bible talks about who this God is and what this God's characteristics is. But one of the refrains that happens over and over in the Old Testament, you find it in many books of the Bible, they're all there, is this line. O Lord, you are a gracious God and compassionate, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. That's part of the image of God within us. It's compassion. Now, why am I digging into this so much? I mean, it sounds like maybe such a theoretical point. It sounds like, okay, Greg, I kind of agree with you. Maybe you don't agree with me. Maybe you got your own ideas about that. But like, this is just like sounds like kind of a mental exercise. Why dig into this? Why spend this kind of time with it? And it's because this, I think, and I really believe that, and it comes from my experience with you folks as well, that the reason that you are here, the reason that you are Jacob's Well, and that you show up on Sunday mornings and you do the other things that we do, is because you are trying to discover your own humanity. I really believe that that's why we're here. I think all of us knows that there is more to us than maybe we've ever been able to realize. And that there is some possibility of who we are and who we can be together that drives us to say, I want to have a place in my life where we can have these kinds of conversations, where we can stop and think about ourselves and how we live and who we are. That aspiration, that may be an aspiration to be more fully human. It might be an aspiration because of who you know you would really like to be as a parent or as a sibling, as a child, as a partner, as a coworker, as a boss, as a student, and you know there's more there and you would like to realize that. It may be because of a hurt that is in your life that drives you towards that. Maybe it's a mental or a physical illness. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe it's loss that you're dealing with. It's transition or rejection or one of so many things. But because of that, you have hope. You have hope for the person that you imagine yourself to be, or you have hope that you could be recognized for the person that you know that you really are. And so you seek to humanize yourself. You seek to be part of a place, a part of a community that says, I want to be more truly and fully and wholly human. So as a community, I think it's our job to do this. I think it's our job not just to think about it, but say, I'm going to think about it so that I can start changing what I do. Now, we talk about this kind of stuff all the time. We use all kinds of language to approach different sides of this. We talk about our growth zones. We talk about the healthy, real, and ideal. We talk about showing up. We talk about care IQ. We talk about our vulnerability and how we can exercise some of those things. All of those sort of weave into this conversation in one way or another. But sometimes we've got to step back, and that's what we're doing this month in September. We step back and we say, we're going to actually talk about the issue itself. We are going to talk about what it means to be truly and fully human. We are going to talk about our capacity for compassion, that element that is so element to being a real and a full and a whole human being. Now, I'm hoping this is something you agree with at some level or another, but maybe you see it as simply an esoteric thought experiment, kind of like I said, and you kind of wonder why we're really digging into it. And it's because of this. Because if our capacity of compassion is really the thing that helps us be human beings, it helps us discover and uncover and develop our humanity, maybe that isn't what we spend all our time on. Maybe we really preoccupy ourselves with other things. and we kind of let that slip into the background. I think there's other things we have a tendency to shape our life around. We say, yeah, I agree, I want to be a compassionate human being. But what are we really spending our time exercising? Well, got a list up here. I think we shape our lives around these things, our pursuit of a career, or our pursuit of wealth, or maybe of fame or achievement. We spend a lot of time trying to develop our health and our beauty. We spend a lot of time just chasing fun or to try to seek out that lifestyle that is easy and that I can just maintain without always having to work so hard and trying to be something so hard. Now, those are not bad things. I mean, that's a really good list of things, and I hope you have a lot of those in your life. But none of them are going to help us claim our humanity. None of them do. You can be fully human and not have those things be intact for yourself. And one of the problems is when they are pursued as goals for your lives for their own sake, they take away your humanity. They take away my humanity. They are more about the luck and the external characteristics of our lives than the things that make us human. Those things that make us human. You know those things that really make us human, the things that demonstrate our compassion. We see it in ourselves when we see it in other people. It's those things that we really love about another person and makes us want to be with that person and to respect that person. The things that cannot be taken away from us, that list can all be taken away from you. Your humanity cannot be taken away from you. They are the things that we achieve through what we give up and not the things that we have, which is very counterintuitive. But those are the things that are most intrinsic, the things that we are the proudest about ourselves, the things that we seek out in other people more than anything else. And we need to elevate those. So it's a heavy conversation. I realize that. Not one that you're likely to, pick up at the water cooler at work or, kind of as you're walking between classes with friends at school, say, hey, by the way, how are you doing in developing your humanity today? Maybe not something you're going to talk about at dinner when you, go and meet your family and everybody's talking about who knows what. But we need places where we can be vulnerable enough with each other to say, you know what? I want to grow. I know I'm of infinite worth, but I also know I've got some rough corners that need to be rubbed off, and I've got some gaps that need to be filled in, and I know I'm going to be in that process forever, and I want to be around people who are willing to do that with me, to help me and to be helped by me. You heard Jordan just a few minutes ago in the welcome talking about group life, and that, we have a new season of it starting up again. Group life, that's what this is about. Group life is the place where we can have these kinds of conversations, where we can be real enough to be ourselves, but we can also admit that we need help and we can support each other. We can offer ideas and we can find encouragement. We can find strength and we can be taught and we can be teaching. And we don't have to judge each other while we do it. So, I encourage that. That's my plug for group life. And I plug group life not because you're going to do me a favor if you get in it. You don't. I mean, group life actually just, for those of us who are trying to like run Jacob's Well, it just makes our life harder, all right? I mean, it'd be easier for us if we didn't have it. Group life happens, we do it because, well, frankly, after about 6 months of being in a community, so this is early in 2007, people started saying, I need a place where I can connect with smaller groups of people around this stuff because I need to process it, because I want to grow because of it. I want to develop my humanity, is what they were saying. And so we said, okay, let's try something. We spent years trying to figure it out, and we call it group life now. I mean, we do group life because I think it makes a difference. It allows us to have traction in the things that are important to us, and it gives us this place where we can know and be known and do important stuff like that. So that's why it's here, and I hope you take advantage of it. So if you're interested or just want to know more about it, write a note on your communication card, talk to the people around you, just get in touch with us one way or the other, and we'll help you with that. So, okay, compassion. Back to compassion. So what is it? So compassion isn't just being tenderhearted. It isn't being a nice person. It isn't just kindness. It isn't charity. It isn't do-gooding. Compassion is being with other people in the deepest, most open, most vulnerable way that we can imagine, most radical way you can imagine. Compassion is being with. You'll see there's a bar on your outline, and on the would be your left side as you look at it. You can write in there, being with. That's one of the expressions, one of the experiences of compassion is simply being with other people. Our word compassion comes from the Latin. The Latin com plus pati, it means with and suffering. Compassion is being with others in their suffering, whatever their experience is, being with them in that, not avoiding it, not trying to keep away from it, being there with them in their suffering. We think about Jesus. If you want to get to know Jesus, the lens that we've been fed through religion about who Jesus is all about rules and laws and how we get into heaven and how we avoid hell and stuff like that. Let go of that stuff. If you want a lens that's going to help you understand who Jesus is and what it might mean to know Jesus, use the lens of compassion. Think of Jesus as a model of compassion. His being willing to be with, to suffer with all people in any situation, no matter what. In fact, the name Jesus, when Jesus' birth is introduced, we are told that he is the Emmanuel. So that's the Hebrew version of it. Emmanuel means God with us, not holding back. God being present, suffering with us, being with us. True compassion isn't about suffering. The purpose of compassion isn't to suffer. It isn't to have a hard time. It isn't seeking pain, but, and this is on your outline, compassion maybe isn't seeking pain and maybe isn't seeking suffering, but it isn't afraid of it either. Compassion is not afraid of the suffering of others. Do you want to humanize yourself? And is the truest measure of your humanity your capacity for compassion? We can't be afraid of the suffering of other people. We can't be offended. We can't be turned off. We can't be disgusted. We can't be repulsed. Maybe that doesn't mean you're attracted either, but you're willing. You're not afraid of it. It's important stuff. The point and the power of compassion is that wherever you are, wherever another person is, you are willing to be with them. I don't want to hide from your suffering. I don't need to belittle it. I don't need to deny it. I don't need to dismiss it or judge it or any of those other things. My humanity is my ability to identify with you. You'll find a homework practice. It's on the bottom of your Sunday paper, and it just says this. It might be something to talk about in group life. It's something to consider on your own. Consider why embracing other people's pain and your own, talk about that in a minute, makes you more human. That is not a real common cultural thought. Embracing another person's pain makes you more human. Spend some time thinking about that. But don't just think about it. Dare an experiment or two. Take it on. Go be with someone else in their pain, in their suffering, and start discovering what you find out about yourself. Okay, so now you may recognize the saying of Jesus. He says this to his followers. This is my commandment. You think of commandments, you think of laws, right? That's what you're supposed to do. Well, he's got a different take on it. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. And then he goes to talk about what that is. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends, to lay down your life, to give that away. Now, the problem with that is it sounds a little ultimate, and it's the kind of thing you only get to do once, right? It's like having the spiritual gift of martyrdom. You know, the only spiritual gift you only get to use once. It's kind of, never mind. But if you read that, I'm a language nut. Those words, to lay down, could just as well be translated, and I think maybe would be better translated, as set aside. No one has greater love than to set aside one's own life for others. Now, that may be laying down your life. It may be the ultimate thing, but this is something we can do on a daily basis. Can you set aside your own, your career, your wealth, your chasing after prestige and fun and pleasure and all those things that are not bad in themselves, but when you need to, can you set those aside to be there with someone else? If you cannot, you're questioning your own humanity. You're questioning whether you are living into that image of God that was put there for you to realize and to make humanity a wonderful gift for this planet, for the people you love and the people that you want to be loved by. Now, if you're like me, when you get to about this point, you say, well, that's good, and I agree with it, but there's something missing there, too, because, I mean, just being with another person and their suffering seems to be lacking something. I mean, really? I remember a cartoon I saw a long, long time ago of a woman sitting next to a quicksand pit as her husband disappears in it and saying to her husband, I love you, because she wanted to be with him in his suffering. Obviously didn't quite love him enough to go get the vine that was hanging right there and throw it to him and pull him out. The thing that seems to be lacking in simply being with is this idea that you're going to actually do something about it as well, where you're going to act. And there's that piece about it too. There is a time to act, and that is the meaning of Jesus' given name, Yeshus, or in Hebrew and Aramaic, the name as he was called in his own language, it would have been pronounced Yeshua, which is the same name as Joshua in English. Yeshua. And Yeshua means Yahweh, I am who I am, you know, the whatever behind all of existence. I am who I am delivers, changes things, comes through, is there and makes a difference. Yahweh delivers. Something happens. And while our English word compassion comes from the Latin to suffer with, like we talked about, the Greek word that describes Jesus and Jesus' action in the Bible comes from a very different origin. It comes from the word for our guts, all right? When it says, and Jesus was moved with compassion, that moved with compassion is a word that says he could feel it in his guts. His innards were twisting. He knew he had to do something. He couldn't leave it alone. He wasn't just there suffering with, he wasn't just feeling, but he was moved to do something, driven to act. The New Testament writer James is writing to the community of people that are trying to follow Jesus, and he says, faith by itself, if it has no works, if it isn't doing anything, if it's not getting off its butt, is dead. All right? Thank you for sitting beside me in the quicksand pit, but would you please throw me the vine? You know? That part is there. That's the other expression of compassion, taking action. And that's the second side of the compassion. You can write that on your continuum too if you're following along with that. So we got being with and we got taking action. And they're both intrinsically part of it. And it's the relation between them that is so important, the tension that is between them. And it isn't an either or, it is a both and it always grows out of being with, and the action comes from there. Because here's the deal, taking action alone may not be a bad thing. In fact, I would say acting for other people that are hurting is virtually always a good thing. But it alone is a compassion. Sometimes it is simply action. There are many motivations that are going to prompt you to fix or to help or to improve or to change someone else. Whatever it is that you want to do so that the discomfort of someone else's pain is going to go away. And here's what I'd like to leave you with and what I'd like to suggest about this. And this is probably also somewhere you're going to want to talk up in group life and maybe spend some time mulling over. Compassion does not seek to fill the silence or to ease my discomfort of being in the presence of your suffering. All right? Compassion never tries to fill the silence, or to ease my discomfort in being with you in your suffering. Compassion says, no, I can breathe and I can be there. And I can hide it. And why? Because the stake is my humanity. Of being able to feel and to be vulnerable and to be with you as you go through that. And that, I think, is why compassion is so closely tied to humanity and why we kind of instinctively understand that compassion is that measure of our humanity. And that's this, and this is also on your outline. It may not be the pain of others that drives you to act. It may be your own pain. I think that is what happens. Most of the time, I would say probably for myself, most of the time, when I act, when I go in there to do something, I'm not actually doing it in response to your pain. I'm doing it in response to my pain. You make me uncomfortable. I can't sit with you in what you're going through. And so in order for me not to have to do that, I'm going to help you change your situation. Compassion gets below that. Compassion sees a person for who they are and understands what's going on. I mean, I think our humanity is at stake in our approaching our actions that way, but it's also the only way that actually works. We talked about frame of reference a couple of weeks ago. We talked about how our frame of reference needs to come from the other person. We cannot put our frame of reference on another person and say, now I know what you need because this was what I need. No, we need to understand from the person themselves, and that requires silence. That requires listening. That requires sitting with that person in their pain, in their suffering, and having our action be evoked from what we experience there. It's easy to tell the people in Houston, don't rebuild in those places that were just flooded. I mean, that's my frame of reference. And I may be right from my frame of reference. But maybe they've never had money to do anything different. Maybe that is where people like them could live. Maybe the possibility of change and going to a different part of the country and leaving land that their families have had for generations, the loss that that represents is so painful that they can never do that on their own. They need people to sit with them. They need people to be there with them. They need a nation to walk that path with them. That's just one of many, many examples. But we will never actually be able to solve other people's problems. We aren't going to find action that is very often going to be actually the action that people need for the healing power in their lives until we have been willing to be with them first. And not only first, but even through our action. So that's an important thing to know. It may not be the pain of others that drives you to act. It may be your own. It is a battle for humanity and for mine if we want to be fully and wholly human. So this is the other thing that I would assert this week, kind of trying to lay a foundation for this whole idea of compassion and how it works with us, and then we'll take it in some other directions the rest of these weeks. But compassion appears to always be about the other person, right? When you first start thinking about compassion, I should be compassionate towards you because you need my compassion. You need me to be compassionate towards you. Not untrue, but compassion is really about you because it's about your humanity. That is what's at stake. And we need to own that and to realize that and to know that our compassion is really about ourselves. So, our capacity for compassion is always needs to balance these two sides of being with and taking action. And to hold them together, hold that tension together the whole time. It's not an easy thing to do. I don't think it's something we can do by ourselves. Right now, as we sit here on this beautiful September Sunday, tens of thousands of people have woken up in the greater Houston area. They're homeless. They're living in shelters that they know they can stand for a couple weeks. Maybe some of them had transitional housing that it's paid for up to 2 months, and they've got to figure out what they're going to do. When they can get back to the homes, will they be able to rebuild them? Will they have the finances? Will they have the ability to do it? Why didn't they take out flood insurance? Or why is the flood insurance not even begin to cover the value of their homes? And then they're fighting the exhaustion. I've been hearing from some relatives that live in Houston and telling us about the adrenaline that pumped for days as they worked on people's houses, but people are tired. People don't have supplies. People don't have ways to get places, and they're maybe staying in shelters miles and miles from the homes that they're trying to rebuild. Right now, as we sit here, Hurricane Irma is barreling through Florida right now. 120-mile-an-hour sustained winds destroying homes, businesses, infrastructure, natural habitat right now. I kind of feel like I'm making us all feel guilty. I mean, that's not the point, is it? I mean, it's just the reality. And if it isn't those things happening right now, which are extremely poignant to us, I mean, we know this is happening around the world in different ways all the time, big ways, macro ways, small ways, personal ways. And we are asked about our compassion. What are we willing to do? What can we set ourselves aside in order to be the people God has called us to be the human beings, to humanize ourselves, to to be there with other people? No easy answer to it. You know, what could we do? We're so far away. It would only add to the problem. I mean, we would just make everything worse if we were there sitting with people going through the hurricane right now in Florida. I don't think they want us there. It's going to be very difficult in days to come as there's no places to stay. All the hotels, all the apartments are filled. They don't have enough supplies. There's not ways to get around. When will our time come? How can we, what can we do? Donations, certainly, but there certainly will be a time when probably presence is also possible. And then there are lots of ways of this being with, of compassion that don't have to do necessarily with physically being beside the person. I think there are ways for us to be compassionate with those who are in need of it in ways that are bigger than that as well. Okay, a last thought, and maybe, hopefully this is a little bit reassuring. So one of the things that I've experienced quite a few times in life is the difficulty of getting somewhere I'm wanting to go. I sail on Lake Superior a lot, and sometimes if I'm going across the lake, all you see is horizon. You can't see land on the other side. And you go, and you go, and you go, and guess what? You don't get any closer to that horizon, because as you approach it, it goes further away. It's the horizon. I spent a lot of time backpacking in the Rockies. I lived in Papua New Guinea in mountains that are actually bigger than the Rockies, and did an awful lot of walking and always looking at that next ridge that I was trying to get to. And I finally get to that ridge, only to discover that there's three more ridges on the other side of it. Compassion is more of a horizon than a destination, okay? You won't arrive, and you aren't expected to arrive. You don't get there, but you move towards it. It's a horizon that pulls us forward and that we approach, and I hope you find that as encouraging, not discouraging. I think it means that, first of all, you cannot judge yourself for where you are. You are the person that you are. Your humanity has great value, even though maybe as you sit back and examine it, it feels like, gee, I haven't made as much progress as I'd like to. It also shows you that there is this possibility of humanizing yourself forever. You never can say, well, gee, I think I've figured out how wonderful it can be to be a human being yet, because there's wonders and amazing aspects of it that you haven't even thought about yet. That horizon keeps growing for you. So we don't need to judge. We don't, you know, I think we need to grow. We need to support each other in the growth. We need to be on that path along with each other. So remember, compassion is like that. It is a horizon, not a destination. That brings us to bread. We got some bread here. It's going to come out in a minute. So we aren't having communion right now. There we go. Those interns are kind of slow picking up on things. That wasn't very compassionate, was it? So Jesus says, you know, unless there's no greater love than this, and you lay down your life for others, that you set aside your life for others. And he said, I don't want you to just like hear that from me. I want you to experience that from me over and over again. And so I think that was one of the things, one of the sacred things that was going on when we celebrate communion. I mean, this bread is the grain of wheat that unless it falls into the ground, it cannot bring forth life. And because it did, there was more wheat and more wheat. And that wheat can be transformed and become something greater. It can become bread. And Jesus wants us to be a part of that experience with each other, to celebrate that, the giving of his life, the setting aside of what was important to him in order that we might have life. We experience that in this bread. It's a symbol of that. So that we could know that we can set aside our lives so that we can have compassion on others so that they could have life. So what we're going to do is, you know, not now, but there's lots and lots of bread. Thank you, Turtle Bread, for supplying this for us. And it's in chunks. And I invite you, as you leave today, take some with you, okay? You can, you might want to use it with your family and say, you know, this is tough stuff that we like to think about and talk about, but we're all here to, you know, be with each other in pain, in each other's suffering, to live, to experience the joys and the tough stuff of life. And we do that, and we give ourselves away, and we're here for other people. And let's just share this bread as a way of connecting with that. Or you might want to take it to group life and explore your thoughts, your own ideas. Don't worry about my words. There's another story about Jesus that I think puts us in a good perspective to walk away with. So Jesus is traveling through the countryside, you know, doing his thing. And a leper comes running up to him. So the story says this leper runs up to Jesus and kneels before him and says to Jesus, "If you choose, you can make me clean." Now, a couple things to understand there. First of all, so leopards are considered to be unclean. I mean, they didn't understand leprosy. If you get too close, if you touch a leper, you know, you're very likely to become a leper yourself. It's a life sentence. You have to live away from other people. You can't be in community anymore. You have to be separate, aside. And clean is really maybe the way of, that was the language of the day. I could be made whole, maybe is a better word for it. Jesus, if you choose, you could make me whole. And then it goes on and says, Jesus is moved by compassion. His gut's twisted in a knot. And he's moved by compassion, and he stretches out his hand. He reaches out to him. You have to realize that you don't do that with lepers. His leper should never have come that close to him in the first place, of breaking all the rules. And he touches him. I mean, that may be the miracle right there. Not that he ends up being made whole or his leprosy is something, but Jesus touched him. He was willing to be with him. And Jesus says, "I do choose. Be whole." Or Jesus says, "I do choose. Be whole." That is the legacy we carry. That is humanity personified. That is what we can aspire to, what we can reach for. To choose to be with people, to touch our lives, to make the difference that only you can make, which is what we'll talk about next week, and to choose to be with others and to touch their lives. So that's what Jacob's Well does. Go, try it out, learn from your blunders as well as your wonders, and share the stories with the rest of us, and let's hold this humanity up around us that needs it so much. Thanks for being Jacob's Well today. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacob's Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.